Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast. I'm Ollie Lum, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host Matt Seddon. This is our third episode, and this week we spoke to Hoka athlete Jenny Nesbitt.
Now, we spoke about her career so far, including representing Wales, Great Britain on the track, roads and cross. She is multi-terrain, is Jenny. She talks us through her goals for the future, gives us a rundown on a typical training week, and she even answered your questions from the Q&A. Which we'll probably keep going in a few more pods as well because it worked quite well. Anyways, it's a long one today, guys, so get after a big long run, won't you?
Yeah. Also, we just wanted to say a big thank you for all the support so far with the podcast. It's been great to get some positive feedback. If you do like the Sunday Podcast, could you please leave us a rating and a review on your preferred podcast streaming platform? But for now, though, back to it. This is episode 3 with Jenny Nesbitt. Enjoy. Hi Jenny, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Good. You're actually our first female athlete on here.
Oh, I feel honoured. Woman power. I think you should have had a female guest as your first one, actually.
Yeah, we should. I think you were booked up, weren't you, for the first one?
Yeah, probably. You guys went to the bottom of my list.
Yeah.
We've been nagging to one.
We worked out we've had all guests beginning with J for now.
Oh my God, that's actually quite cool.
Yeah, without really realising, so we'll have to find someone else with a J next week, maybe.
We'll see. What you should do is like just go down the alphabet now, and then just keep going down to Z and then round again.
Yeah, could do. That would be very organised. Have you been training today?
I have. I had a session this morning, gym session, and then a double. So about 17 miles today.
What?
Go on, let's talk us through it then. What went down?
All those races that are coming up, you know?
True. So,
got up, we did a session in the park. It was 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, three times round with 2 minute jog between. So that was about 7.5 miles in total. Then I went to the gym, did an hour in the gym. Then I went to uni and then I did a 5 mile run this evening.
Oh, okay, and then we've warm up and cool down, I guess.
Warm up and cool down, yeah. Yeah.
What sort of pace was the session, or can you not tell us?
Oh, no, it's all right, I'll give away my top secrets. So it was all between 5 minute and 5:15 pace.
Mm-hmm. Was it jog recovery or floats?
Yeah, so it was like 7:30 pace. So, you know what my coach was like.
Yeah. Always flying around.
Dropping you every morning, Ollie.
Yeah, I know. I can't. 7:30 a.m. She's straight off. 6:30 mile in. I'm like, nah.
Bam, straight out the door. You did a rough morning a couple of weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah. I couldn't break 7:30s, Matt.
Right, yeah, you told me about this. He told me about this. He was like stopping, feeling dizzy. It was just, yeah.
We stopped at a crossing like in between like a main road in Cardiff, and it's like I feel really lightheaded, I don't know what to do, and I'm just stood there like there's traffic moving on either side of us right now, please don't pass out.
I got my fueling strategy wrong, eh?
I was gonna say, mate, it's low blood sugars, mate, it's low blood sugars. What I was gonna say, Jenny, what races have you got coming up? Have you got any? Do you know of any?
No, well, actually, that's a lie. I am planning on running the Hatfield 5 mile race on the 27th of December.
Oh my gosh, me too, mate. I better get my...
Are you actually?
Yeah, I'm doing it.
Oh, well, come on, bring it on.
Although I thought it was 2021. In email, it's like it's been postponed till 2021.
Because I emailed them yesterday and I think they...
Yeah, well, yeah. Lum was like, check the website, and I was like, oh yeah, it says 2020. So they just made a little bit of a cock up, I think. Stay off the box today. Let's go.
Let's bring it on.
That's the big one. Do you have a 5 mile PB, Jen?
No, I don't. So it will be a PB, whatever happens.
Yeah, same for Matt, I think, as well.
Well, it'll be my debut road race as well, won't it, mate?
Oh, yeah, apart from road relays, I guess.
Nice.
Yeah, apart from road relays, yeah. Debut road relays.
I'm either going to be really well fueled, or I'm just going to be like a ball, and I'll be like rolling around.
I think I'll be the latter.
It's not ideal.
I'm definitely going to be the latter. Yeah.
Could be worse. Boxing Day would be worse.
Yeah, that is true.
I think you'll be well fueled, to be fair. Like Christmas Day, then you've got a day to kind of let it settle. And then those roast potatoes, just rocket fuel.
Can you imagine?
I don't let it settle, mate. I just carry on going on Boxing Day. I'm like, well, I better finish all the chocolates. So it just gets worse.
That was literally me. Like every leftover in the house, I'm after it.
Right, love, get back to the questions, mate.
Right, yeah, let's get cracking then. So most recently, I believe you did a pace job at London Marathon. Just wanted to ask you how that was, really.
It was really cool. I kind of wasn't planning on doing it. And then I kind of got asked if I'd like to do it on a day that I actually didn't finish a session and decided I was going to quit running for the foreseeable future. So I was like, right, okay, I'll do it. So I had 3 weeks basically to do something that was longer than a 5K session. And I went there and I actually really enjoyed it and it felt pretty comfortable. I know like running a half is nowhere near the same as running a marathon, but it was a good way to kind of see if I'd sort of enjoy running a marathon. And it was actually pretty cool. The bubble thing was a bit weird and we had this horrible bump device on us that just beeped all the time whilst we were in the hotel. And the weather was absolutely disgusting on the morning. Like, oh my God, it was pissing down with rain. Like, it was hell. And I was planning on going on staying and watching Josh after, but I was so cold. I like just decided to leave and let him suffer on his own.
Well, because didn't they force, didn't the women start at like, what, 7 or something?
Yeah.
Is it 7?
What's the earliest time you've ever got up for a race?
Probably like 6. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, 6, something like that.
Yeah. Try 3:30 a.m.
That's, why did you feel the need to wake up so early? Like, obviously you're ready for the 7, but yeah.
The hotel was like an hour's drive from the race.
Wow.
So they
wanted
to leave at like half past four. I think we had to be down in the like lobby at 4:15.
Wow.
It was hell. I was like back at the hotel, like eating my breakfast at like 9:30. Having run a half marathon.
What did you go through the half in then?
I went 74:30. So they wanted me to go through in 74:30. And honestly, I did not expect to be able to do a good pace job at all. I'm horrific in sessions usually.
Did you get a bonus for hitting pace?
I did hint at it. I haven't been paid yet, but I did hint at it. I was like, well, I did exactly what you asked me to do. So that's really good, isn't it?
That is just your job, though, isn't it, really?
Yeah. All right, Ollie, thanks.
I mean, when a postman delivers post, he doesn't get paid extra, does he?
Mate, this is it.
Thanks, Ollie. You've just brought me back down to the ground.
Yeah, but I remember you telling me that your 5K splits were pretty bang on as well, weren't they? It wasn't just a bang on pace job for the half. It was all the way through.
Yeah, so each 5K was meant to be 17:40. And I went 17:40, 17:44, 17:40, 17:36. So I think that's a pretty good job.
Yeah, that's top work. Do you think the laps helped you? Because I don't know about you guys, but personally, I find like if it's a lapped kind of tempo or anything like that, it feels a bit easier to get in that rhythm.
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed the laps. I think, like you said, it just helps you get into a rhythm. And it also had like a clock every lap telling you what your predicted finish time was. So every like lap, which it was only like 1.3 miles or something, you had a good idea if you were on pace or not by what your predicted finish time was. I think the only thing they could have got rid of was every like mile marker and kilometer marker was out on the course. And by like the 5th lap, I had no idea what mile or kilometre I was coming up to. There's like a massive array of numbers and I had no clue.
That sounds just crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess in the future they could have an electronic one maybe that changes for you and then you know exactly what you're doing.
That would be way better. But yeah, that was like the one thing that I was a bit like, oh, this is really confusing because I've got no clue what mile we're on.
Yeah. I mean, I found the indoor 3K that I didn't have a clue where I was. I was like looking at the laps and I'm like, yeah, I can't even think right now all the time.
You'd have definitely been screwed, Ollie. Yeah.
I don't know splits after like, I don't know, after a 1500, I don't know what the splits are meant to be.
Like, oh, I'm just going to wing it. Just run until, like, everything hurts so much you can't get any faster.
Yeah, basically. So, yeah. Yeah.
You're a marathon man now, man.
Sorry?
You're a marathon man now, mate.
Nah, not quite.
Making a step up to the marathon soon.
Hey.
Yeah, well, you got your debut coming up soon. Hey, so you can get them sorted, mate. You need them locked in.
Everyone watch out. Ollie Lum is debuting.
Yeah.
MK Half. You want races? MK Half's probably the earliest one.
Where's that?
Yeah, 13th of December, I think.
Actually, don't turn up. Lum wanted to win. He wanted to win in his hometown.
Yeah, I'll take 74:30, Jen.
I'll pace you if you want.
Yeah. yeah, just for the listeners then, so Jenny's not just a pacemaker. You have to be a pretty high caliber athlete to be able to pace an event like London Marathon. So Jenny, what are your PBs then over like 5k, 10k? I think I know, but I'll make sure I don't make any mistakes so you can say them.
So we'll start with 5k is 15:30, which I ran in 2019. 10k is 32:38, which I ran in 2018, I think. Half marathon, I've run 72:54. So those are probably my best ones. I've also run 60.7 for 400 meters, and I'm very proud of that.
That's pretty impressive range, to be fair. Probably rivals the likes of Gabe Rupp. Yeah, so I guess like really impressive array of times there. When did you actually start running? Because you're 25 now?
Yeah. So I started.
When did you start?
I started running when I was about 13. So what's that? 12 years ago?
Quick math.
So that must be like year 8 or year 9 at school. And literally no one wanted to run the 800 meters for like this like English school's cup thing we were doing for like the county. So I kind of volunteered myself and I was like, oh, I'll do it. Basically because I wanted to be on the team. And I was like not very good at anything else. So I did it and I think I won and then I really enjoyed it. So I just kind of carried on from there. And about a year later, I joined like our local club at home, Worcester Athletics Club, and got introduced to the distance running coach there. And he kind of progressed me through all my junior years until I moved to Cardiff and then changed to Chris.
Wow. So did you remember what time you ran in that first 800 or can you not remember?
I can't remember. I think it was about 2:50. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't very impressive.
I mean, that's bad for a 13-year-old.
It's not too bad.
I just remember definitely going off way too hard and basically walking the last 200 meters, which I tend to do in all my races.
That's how runs an 800. That's how you do them. You blitz the first 200 and you die the rest of the way.
What is it? It's who doesn't slow down the most on the second lap or something.
That's exactly it, mate.
Easy.
2.3 seconds. That's the optimum differential.
Is it?
Yeah.
You were once an 800 meter pro, so you know, now you've progressed up distance.
Jenny, what was it like at Worcester? Because like, don't take offense to this. It's not a very renowned place for like its running. I swear even your county is like quite small in running terms. So what, like, obviously, you know, most people, they enjoy running because like the social aspect, you know, in your local club, there's loads of people. What was the dynamics of your club? Was it busy? Was there actually people there? Am I wrong? Or am I right in kind of thinking, you know, it's quite low key?
So it definitely changed as I got older. When I started, there was a few, like a lot of other kind of girls and guys in the group who are a few years older than me, so they must have been about 15 or 16. So we had like a nice kind of small group that did meet up every like Tuesday and Thursday, which was really great. And we managed to like get three girls together for like the road relays and stuff like that. But as I got older, they all kind of left to go to university and stuff. So by the time I was about 16, I was basically just training on my own. And from the age of 16 until 21, I basically did everything on my own. So you're kind of right. Worcester was like it's very small. And the county, Worcestershire, is the smallest county ever. And I think there was probably about four people that you need, like that turned up to like the county school racing.
County school, yeah.
So like getting like English schools cross was one of the easiest things in the world. You literally just had to finish the race.
I know. Compare that to some, and it's like just massive. People are like scrap for like that eighth spot.
Yeah, something like that, and it's like, oh my god, I would hate to be. I'd hate to be in that county.
Yeah, nuts.
Well, you had that in Berkshire, didn't you, Matt?
Berkshire. We got a few podiums, a few team bronzes in 2012. Yeah. We had a strong team, though. I mean, I had Johnny D and Scott carrying the team most of the way. So, yeah.
Worcestershire did have, like, a really decent team one year, though. I remember inter-counties when it was still the final. Inter-counties when it was still in Cofton Park in Birmingham. Mm. Was it 2012?
That's when I got a bronze. Team bronze.
2012. Yeah. I think we were still, like, under 17 or something. But Worcestershire won. Our team on that day, it was me, Becky Straw, Chloe Richardson and Alice Wright.
Fair play. I take back the Worcestershire comment being a tiny county and low-key.
Like, for a tiny county, I thought that's pretty impressive team.
Well, that's interesting. Sort of crop of you all came. Were you at the same club or different clubs? Crop of you came at the same time.
They were at the same club. And then I think Becky and Chloe were at Birchfield.
Oh, okay.
But their residence was within Worcestershire. Yeah. Or something.
Got you.
So, yeah, like for a little county, it's pretty impressive.
Okay, so I guess that takes me on quite nicely to what I wanted to ask next. So you kind of had some good success there, but can you think of the first time you thought, I'm actually having quite a bit of success in running? A couple of times.
I think the first one was probably like mini marathon in 2012. So I think I was maybe like the oldest age you could go. And I'd done it the year before. But that year I came second behind Jess Judd.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Jess Judd was like literally my idol. I was like, oh my God, Jess is just so cool. And I finished second behind her. So I think that was like a big kind of, okay, I'm pretty all right at this kind of running thing if I can come kind of second in something like the mini marathon. And then I think the next time I kind of had a moment where I was like, okay, this is worth what I'm doing, was the first 10K I ran, which was actually the Worcester City 10K. And I think it must have been in like 2014. And I'd had like a year and a half out from running, hadn't done much training at all. I'd been back running for maybe 4 months, and I ran like 34:20 in my first ever 10K, which was like the fastest under 20 time that year. And I beat Paula Radcliffe, and I know she was not at the top of her game at all when I raced her, but to beat someone like that is pretty cool.
I think I remember that. Lon, we were at uni then, weren't we?
Yeah. So I was on a gap year.
Yeah, I actually think I remember something like that. Shout out to SLP. Didn't he do the same?
Yeah, thing? I was gonna say SLP should do that.
I can't remember if I beat
him. I mean, that's how we know about it. Well, he definitely beat Paula. He beat Paula because he didn't stop talking about it for a little while. So
yeah, I think they had a Facebook profile picture together on his.
Him. Oh, he did, didn't he? I remember that. It's like him and her together.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely big shout out to Sam Lloyd Perks. One guy.
Oh my God, he'll love it. He's definitely going to be listening to this as well, isn't he?
I hope so. So pretty successful then. Can you just explain what the mini marathon is, just for people who might not know? Because it is a pretty high caliber event.
So the mini marathon is basically a race you can do as like junior. I think you can do it as like an under 15 and then under 17 and maybe an under 13 as well, and it's the last 3 miles of the London Marathon course, and you basically start the race, you do your race before the main marathon starts, and then you finish in the mile and everything like you would if you were running the full distance, but it's a really cool weekend away because you go with like your team. I think
it's regions, isn't it?
Regionals. Yeah. You go for like your regional team, and then you stay at the. Do they still stay at Royal Holloway? Do you know?
I'm not sure.
I don't know if they still do, but yeah, I remember they used to.
Yeah, so we used to go to stay at Royal Holloway. It was kind of like staying at like Harry Potter, because it was kind of like really old. And I remember every single time I went, it was the same dinner. It was like chicken pasta bake. And then you'd get up in the morning and they'd take you to like the start of the race, which was like, 3 miles away from the finish line. So it was a really cool race to do. And as a junior, you don't get many road races to like opportunities to do road races. So that was kind of one of the only ones of the year that you kind of get to do apart from the road relays.
Okay. Well, so what sort of training were you doing, Jenny, at this point? So you're having kind of quite a lot of junior success, but what sort of training was actually leading to that? Do you think you were doing quite low key stuff, like just your normal club athletic stuff, or was it a bit more structured?
To be honest, I think I was doing pretty normal, like low-key stuff. I'd go to training on a Tuesday and a Thursday night and would do whatever the club session was. I can't really remember that what we did, but I know a lot of it was kind of like in the woods, like on the grass, like lots of soft surfaces, all run to like time rather than anything else. And I never had a Garmin at this time, so I don't know what mileage I was doing, but I had a little Casio, the classic black Casio. So I probably run like maybe 2 or 3 times outside club training one like during the week, maybe for like 20 to 30 minutes, and then do a sort of hour run on a Sunday maybe. But apart from that, it was pretty basic stuff. But I'm definitely gonna say that I probably ran everything pretty fast, just because of the sort of person I was. I don't think I ever really jogged. So it's probably all quite high intensity.
Yeah. How has that kind of progressed to what you do now then? Like, do you remember when you started having kind of a lot more mileage or a lot more structure? How old were you then?
So I think when I finished school, so when I was 18, everything became a lot more structured. I think because I had a lot more time and flexibility, I took a gap year and then I did university part-time. Everything became a lot more structured, and I started adding in like a few double days on session days. So I'd like go out for a shakeout in the morning and then do my session in the evening. The long run got progressively longer. Now I run anywhere between like 12 to, I think the longest I've gone on a Sunday is like 18 miles. Mm-hmm. So that's like just gradually increased as I've got older. Sessions have just got like a lot more intense or like longer. I think before I was kind of a senior, my longest session was probably about 4 miles in total, 4 or 5 miles, where now it can be anywhere up to like 10 miles. So I think those are probably the biggest differences. I do a lot more double days, but I do a lot more easy running. I look back at some of the training I did in like 2016 and compare it to now, and I'm like, how the hell did I do what I did in 2016? Because I couldn't imagine being able to kind of maintain that now. So I think I've definitely learned a lot over the years as to what is the best way to train in order to get the best out of your sessions, because those are like the most important things. So I think that's probably where the biggest differences have come. And another thing that I gradually increased as I got older was work in the gym. I never did any gym work until I was 18. And then my old coach had like a really retro gym in his garage. And he'd like let me come around and use it like twice a week. And he like kind of taught me like the real basics of gym work. And I think that's definitely helped me like remain robust over the last few years. I've never really had any like, touch wood, serious injuries apart from like 2 knee operations. Okay, I know that sounds like like really bad.
Apart from a couple of broken limbs.
I've been getting hit by a car out on a run.
Yeah, except for nearly getting like, run over and having 2 knee surgeries. I've not ever really had to take any time off running from injury. And the knee operations weren't really related to training. They were more related to previous illnesses I'd had. So I really do think like just basic gym work really helped me remain consistent, which I think if you can just layer years upon years of training, that's the best way to kind of develop and progress as an athlete.
Yeah. So do you think those changes, did they come from you kind of getting older and being a bit more experienced, or did it come a lot from your coaches? I know you mentioned about the gym work stuff, but what about the running as well?
The running definitely came from my coaches and not from me. When I kind of got to know Chris, my coach now, Chris Jones, quite well, I think it was my first European cross. He was my team manager. And he just remained in contact with me since then, and kind of like checked in to see how I was doing and what my training was like. And I'd tell him what I was doing, and he'd just kind of fire back emails being like, Jenny, you're doing this like all wrong. You need to like slow down, and stuff. I remember he sat down with me one day, and went through some testing I'd done and basically just ripped me apart. He was like, you're doing all this wrong. You need to change this. You need to change this. You need to look at like what your heart rate is doing. And I just remember sitting there trying not to cry, being like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. I've done everything wrong. And I think it's been like a constant him telling me or reminding me to kind of slow down and kind of get ready to run well in a session over the last few years that has finally started to kind of be fixed into my mind.
How did you, obviously he started telling you that, and are you still with your old coach at this point? How did you sort of transition? Was there like bad blood between your old coach and you, or was it like pretty smooth? You were just like, right, I think I'm ready to move on. How'd that go about?
It was a little bit of both, really. And I think I got to the point where I was ready to move on to a new coach who had different ideas about running and approached it in a different way. So I kind of went to my old coach, and first of all, I was like, Chris has suggested this. He's looked at the science. He's done like some blood lactate with me. What do you think? And my coach was my old coach was very kind of like old fashioned. And he was like, no, it's just run. It's like hard work. You just got to grind. It's hard work. I was like, oh, okay. So I kind of was like, right, well, I'm going to do this anyway. And I'd like turn up to the track, and sometimes like it wouldn't go down too well.
So you turn up with like what, heart rate monitor or like planning to run at a set pace?
A heart rate monitor in a session that Chris had set me, but my old coach being there. And they'd be like, oh, I don't know about this. I don't know about that. I'd be like, well, I'm going to do it anyway. And then about a month later, we kind of set up a meeting. So it was like me, Chris, and then my old coach, Dave. And we all kind of sat around a table. And I said, I kind of just explained, like, I really feel like I need to kind of move on to a coach that's kind of looking at this from a different angle. I feel like I've got really far with you, but I think I need to just have a change, new stimulus, new environment, and take it from there. And once we sort of had that discussion, it was a lot more kind of like civil between us all. And I kind of moved on with Chris, and he kind of went back to coaching at the club. And since then, we've kept in contact just about. I kind of give him a few updates every now and then. But yeah, so that's kind of how that happened.
Well, that's cool. It's good you almost like managed to sort it, because it can be a sticky situation. And I'm sure there's plenty of people out there who, I think when you get to that age, like you probably do a little bit more research yourself. Like you get to when was this? Like 20, 21?
Around 2017. So yeah, about 3.5 years ago. Yeah.
That's this. You're doing a bit more research. You're getting outside sources as well. And then sometimes you look at your own training. There's probably a few people going through the same thing. Yeah, you went through the same thing, didn't you?
Yeah, I think it's important that people remember, like, the grass isn't always greener as well. Obviously, there's a lot of times where you read a lot of things about all these different training, and you can't do everything. You can't apply pretty much every training philosophy always.
I think that's it. The problem with running is people go, oh, look, he's winning, or he or she is winning races. This is how they train. And people try and replicate that, and they need to know that all, like, everyone's different. And like Lum says, every pro will probably have like a different training setup and like specialize in certain different areas of like a training program a lot more than others.
And like people as well with like social media and stuff tend to only post like the good side of their training as well. So you see all the good stuff, but you don't see all the other stuff they might do, or all the bad sessions they have, or all the other components of their training. And you just kind of, you look at the good stuff and you're like, oh, I want to do that.
I think that's a huge one. Like, people will only talk about sessions they've done well. Yeah. And then so it, almost like subconsciously, you'll be comparing yourself to their best version of someone else, not like a bad day of someone else, where when you're having a bad day, you'll be like, Christ, so-and-so does this. Literally. When you should really just think, you know, that's their best version. That's like their PB session.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, you're probably coming away from like one of the worst sessions of your life, feeling like really crap. Yeah. And then you look at that and you're like, oh God, this is awful.
Mm. Yeah, I think like even just, I remember Matt, me and you used to watch Flow Track all the time. And probably apart from the Robbie Andrews documentary where he does a lot of jogging, like every workout you see on there is people thinking, right, Flow Track's here, we're going to crush it today.
Yeah, man.
And then you think, oh well, I should be like pushing myself to do these sorts of workouts and things like that, and and it's very easy to get carried away. So Jenny, like as you kind of progress this different style of training, do you mind giving us a little rundown of what you actually do, kind of week by week, or maybe at the moment what sort of training you're doing, if you don't mind?
Yeah, sure.
Because so you want everyone to know, and then everyone can copy your training.
I mean, this is disclaimer. This is my training, so you know you got to check in and make sure what you're doing is right for yourself. Not everyone is the same. but for me, a typical week at the moment would consist of anywhere between 80 and 90 miles, with two gym sessions, which I put on session days. So we have a big emphasis on making the hard days hard and the easy days easy. So if I go through the week, Monday I run 8 miles in the morning. I do some strides and some drills, a quick like single leg sort of like strength workout thing, which takes about 15 minutes. And then in the evening I just do an easy 4 miles. And that the pace there on both those runs is, well, when I run with Ollie in the mornings on a Monday, it's about 8 minute miling. No, it's not. It's anywhere between like 7 and 7:30 per mile for those two runs on a Monday. On a Tuesday, we have a session, which we do on the road. Today it was 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute times three. Last week we did 10 by 2 minutes, 5 by 1 minute. So it's some form of like fartlek work, really. Anywhere between 5 and 8 miles worth of work, 2 mile warm up, 2 mile warm down, and then straight in the gym. And then in the evening, I'll do like an easy 5 mile run. And I literally just have to kind of drag my legs through that. So that's pretty slow. A Wednesday is a medium long run. So we do about 12 miles. Again, like super easy, anywhere between like 7 and 7:30 per mile. And that's literally it for a Wednesday. I take the rest of the day off. Thursday is the same as Monday. Friday is another session day. At the moment, it's kind of just tempo work. So on Friday this week, we've got 8 by a K off a minute, just at like tempo pace. So it'd be at like 3:20 a K. And it's just about making sure they're all the same pace. Last week, we did a little bit of like fartlek, so we did 40 seconds fast, a minute jog, 8 times, and then 3 by a mile off 90 in 5:15. And then again, straight in the gym, and then an easy 5 mile run in the evening. Saturday is either a rest day or like a 20 minute jog, don't really do a lot. And then Sunday is long run, and at the moment it's about 15 miles at about 7 minute pace.
That's a full on training program. What's your setup? Are you just full time? Like, if so, like, how, where's the income coming from? Like, what's, yeah. I might be like delving into a little bit too much detail here, but I was just curious, really.
So I'm a student, in brackets. I am doing a part-time master's at the moment in sports broadcasting, which requires me to be on campus 2 afternoons a week. And then I have one online lecture. So
God, that's demanding. That is demanding of them.
Pretty demanding. So aside from that, yes, I literally spend the rest of my life living the full-time athlete life, which I've come quite accustomed to and don't really want to ever leave. So I'm trying to find as many masters to do as possible before I stop getting given a student loan. but aside from that, this year has been pretty bad in terms of earnings, because a lot of my kind of income would come from appearance fees and prize money, or my bonus scheme. And obviously we've had no races, so I haven't really earned anything from that. But then on top of that, I'm on a contract with Hoka, so they paid a small amount as well. And then Welsh Athletics also like fund us as well, so I'm on their like program too. So with all those kind of collectively, I managed to just scrape by most years. Obviously got very, very supportive parents as well. And I think I'm definitely very privileged to be in a position where they go above and beyond to support me, like financially as well as emotionally and all the other things as well. So they've allowed me to kind of live this lifestyle so far. So I'm very grateful.
I know. I think it's just almost like a vicious circle, isn't it? Like you need to invest more in training, but then at the same time, like you need to weigh up the balance of like getting income. You know, a lot of people, like they have to work and stuff, and it's just like what do you do first? You just take a risk and wing it. Like that's paid off for some people, wasn't it? Lum, did Bouchard do that? Just sort of like jacking his job fully and just
I saw something about that. Yeah.
Yeah, he just sort of winged it and then paid off for him.
That is the really hard thing. And I think kind of, especially like going from like a junior to a senior as well, that's like that stage in your life where it's like you're starting uni, like you're just about to put yourself into a massive amount of debt anyway through that. You want to try and make it as a runner. And then it's kind of, weighing it all up and being able to survive and live as well. And there was like a really interesting statistic from 2012 where I can't remember the exact figure, but over like 80% of all the medal winners came from privately educated backgrounds, with like, you know, quite like well off families.
Really?
And I think that's like, it is like a massive, like, you are in a very lucky position if that is something that you can take advantage of. And I have like so many friends who do a session and have to go and do 8 hours of work or whatever. And like, honestly, they are like absolute grinders and like massive
heroes. You're looking at one.
Heroes. Bow down to you.
We fought weeks.
Oh my God. Incredible work ethic. To then like be, you know, running what they are able to run. It's really admirable.
At the same time though, I've been on a few camps with like my bro and stuff. And we went on one this year with my bro and Jake, and we were in America. And I do, obviously, I work full-time, but I do almost, I don't really envy them being full-time athletes, because I think it's just so, it's so intense.
Yeah.
There's nothing really to take your mind downtime. You don't really enjoy life. Like, you can't just, boom, indulge in, like, a pizza one night and stuff like that, because your job is actually 24/7, and it's... Yeah. It's like, crikey. It's so intense every session. And like you were saying with the races and stuff, you know, your an athlete's earnings is mostly when they compete. So during like a small window of the year, 3, 4, 5 months of a summer, most of the time. And obviously this year they didn't get much, but imagine having that stress of just thinking, crikey, if I do not perform in this race, I'm going to lose out on like half
my potential earnings of this year and stuff like that. And I think that constant, you know, almost like constant stress and pressure, I don't envy as much as, you know, you think it's an ideal lifestyle, but when you actually do it for a period of time, it's hard, very hard.
Yeah, and I think, again, like in like, we as athletes kind of portray it as this amazing lifestyle. We get to go to all these cool countries.
So true. Yeah.
All that. Actually, yeah, behind it, there is like, you go to a cool country, but you don't actually see any of it. You see the airport, the hotel, and the track. There is a massive amount of pressure on you having to perform well, especially when like national governing bodies are funding you to do your training and like your training camps and all the other things that go with it. So yeah, I think you have to be able to still have other interests outside of the sport too at the same time. Even for me, like doing just other things during the day that aren't related to running, if I can, every day, even if it's just something small, I think it's really important to kind of just keep a balance. Otherwise it does get really kind of all consuming. And like you say, you end up putting so much pressure on yourself that it isn't enjoyable anymore. Your performances drop, and then, you know, all the other things that come with
it. I think that's it. You're on such like a fragile thing as well. Like, it's not like in football where you sign like these huge deals and the money is actually good enough to just keep you going for years. The minute you lose that, it's like, Jesus, now I need to start work. And then you start work and you can't train as much. And it's just like, it's like scary.
You have to consistently have good years. And like, it is like kind of like human nature not to have a good year. And it's, I think it depends what your contract is and what brand you're with and who's supporting you as to whether or not that year is then detrimental to the rest of your career or not.
Agreed.
Speaking of those years then, Jen, so obviously this year has been a bit kind of a down year for you, I guess, in terms of there's just not been much available. What's kind of your race plan then in the short term? What's the way you're going to make those jumps to the next level? Like, have you thought about that at all? Or maybe even in the long term? Because I guess short term is quite difficult at the moment.
Short term is very difficult. But I think at the moment, like, my biggest focus is the commies in 2022. So between now and then, it's A, running the standards. So finding races that are going ahead that are paced to the standards that are necessary. And then kind of getting there in a really good position to compete rather than literally just sit at the back of the train that I was on last time and then end up very near the end of the race. So I think for me, between now and the end of next year, it's finding some 5Ks and 10Ks, either here in the UK or in Europe, but ideally in America, Peyton and Stanford, racing those, hopefully securing the standard, and then using the summer just to kind of get back into the racing scene, getting used to it again, going through all those like pre-race routines and stuff, and then doing something a little bit more outrageous in October and running a marathon before going back to preparing for the Commonwealth Games.
Wow, so you've got the marathon debut on the horizon, is it?
Marathon debut is on the horizon. I'm looking at doing London next October, if all goes to plan.
Yeah, awesome. I just wanted to like backtrack a little bit because I found it quite interesting how you talked about. So you've obviously been to the Commonwealth Games before 2018. Yeah. And just, I think it's so true what you kind of said just about how, you've experienced it, but you want to actually get to that next level and go there and compete now. Because I think, especially like we've been talking about how a lot of athletes think, and I think a lot of people think, oh, I just want to get to that level. And then they don't realize that there's another whole jump once you get there as well. And you almost get fed to the wolves a bit.
Definitely. Like, so for me, going in 2018 was like, oh my God, I've made it. This is so cool. And I think the fact that it was in Australia kind of definitely helped because it was basically like a 7-week holiday.
Sunny Birmingham next time.
Yeah. And then the next time it is in sunny Birmingham, but it's a home games, and I think the whole wanting to compete, I want to be able to run well enough that I kind of can walk away and be like, oh, I was actually in the race. And like you say, it is a massive step up. And I think a lot of it comes from experience and having the confidence to stick your foot in. And I think kind of exposing myself last time definitely kind of opened my eyes up to what it really does take to kind of put yourself in the race rather than just run 25 laps of a track.
Mm. What do you think it will take then? Like, obviously consistent training and things like that, but is there anything you think that you could really work on personally?
For me, definitely being able to change gears a lot more. Mm-hmm. I've never been able to run well in a race where I'm quite happy sitting in the pack and then suddenly someone puts on a gear change and runs a quick 400 and then I'm blown out the back door. I think definitely with championship races, being able to kind of shift gear and almost fartlek a race will definitely kind of put you in a better position when it comes to kind of finishing as high up the field as possible.
Yeah, interesting.
I was just going to say, I think that's like the hardest part of running these days, is because everything is so geared towards like qualifying times or running a PB and boosting your ranking that no one trains for championship racing really anymore. Everyone just gears themselves towards like the perfect race, hitting the perfect splits. So that's a good one to probably work on, is because if you have that against people, you're going to be at a huge advantage, really.
Definitely. You can be like way up in a world ranking, but be absolutely crap at championship racing. And you see it happen. Like they're absolutely torn apart. And people can kind of come through and win races. And you just don't expect them to. If you look at...
Well, it feels horrible. Yeah, it feels horrible. If you run 70s and then someone says run a 60, oh my gosh. Or like 75 and then a 65. It feels horrible. It feels like you're absolutely maxed out. Like your breathing's completely different. So it's a good thing to work on.
Definitely. So yeah, watch this space. I might be able to break, my 400 meter PB one day.
Yeah, that's at the end of a 5K, then you're laughing.
Yeah, maybe not.
Okay, so if that's kind of the midterm goal, what are your goals for the future, for the rest of your running career, Jenny?
I think I want to be able to go to say that I've been to an Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
In what event, I'm not sure. But I can sort of see myself turning to the marathon in like the near future after 2022. Mm-hmm. So maybe that. But yeah, definitely going to the Olympics is up there with what I want to achieve. But I'd like to run times that people can look at in, 30 years with shoe technology development and still be like, oh yeah, that is a good time. Not, you know what I mean? Like, even...
Shoe tech's not advancing. What are you on about? They've leveled that. That's not been advanced for 30 years now.
It's equal. You can't max it out anymore.
they've said, boom, limits. That's it.
Oh, I'm sure they'll find a way. Don't worry.
It's going to be a fair game. No, they're going to like start resurfacing roads and stuff. I think it's going to get out of hand.
It's going to go mental. They're going to bring the weather they want on the day. Probably put a tent up so you can just run through it without any wind. For a marathon. But yeah, so I think, having times that I'm really pleased with, that I feel like are the best performances I could have ever achieved. And going to as many like major champs as possible, because that is the funnest part of competing. Being able to like put on a Great Britain Best, a big championship, is really cool. So to have as many of those opportunities as possible, really.
Okay. Great. I think that brings us round nicely to the end of part one. So we'll catch you in part two. Okay, so welcome to part two, guys. Slightly different thing here. We're doing a little Q&A with Jenny. So we've got some of Jenny's fans have sent in some questions. For her. Jenny, you ready to go?
I'm ready. Come on, fire away.
Perfect. Josh Lunn wants to know what's for dinner.
Tell him it's in the fridge and he needs to cook it when he gets home.
Ooh. Yeah. Anyway, on to the serious ones then.
We don't want to get into a domestic row. We'll move on.
Let's save that for another day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So someone's actually asked if you have a weekly nutrition plan.
The short answer is no. I typically eat whatever I fancy, really. I'm actually quite a fan of fruit and veg, so I don't really struggle that much to get that into my diet. But I'm partial to cake and chocolate too. So long as I have three good meals a day, that's kind of the rule I stick to.
Yeah, all about balance. Nothing wrong
all
with
about balance.
Treats. Okay, how do you stay motivated when you don't feel like running?
I think because running is pretty much how I earn money. I treat it as a job in that respect, that if I got up and I didn't want to go to work, I'd still have to go. So if I get up and I don't want to go for a run, I'm still going to go because it'll pay off in the long run when I do a race and I do well in it.
That's a good way of looking at it.
What's your favourite sporting moment that you've experienced during your career and why?
I'm going to have to give you two answers here. The first one's the Commonwealth Games in 2018, just because it was something like I'd never done anything like that before. It's like a multi-sport event. You're on the other side of the world, and you know, you're surrounded by so many inspirational athletes. It was definitely like a massive motivator for me, that one. I came away really motivated. And the second one was the World Cross last year in Aarhus, which is in Denmark. And that was literally a race like nothing else. You ran over the top of like a museum roof. And I mean, the hill was just absolutely hideous and you had to do it five times. But the race itself was really, really cool. Those are my two top experiences.
Yeah, that World Cross, that's probably a good one for people to watch or listen if they want to, because it's quite a good watch with the state of the course, really. It's interesting.
Definitely. Literally watch the amount of people who like go out and like burn and die as well, because it was horrific.
What are some good times for an under 15 boy, 800 to 5k?
That's a really good question.
You want to start?
I'm not that sure. I'm not really including with men's times. I'm going to say 800 and under 15 for a boy.
No, bro, we can help her out, bro.
Come on.
But to be fair, like under 15s, it doesn't
I think it's good that you're just enjoying the sport, to be honest. I think finding a love for the sport at that age. And obviously, it's good to run fast times when you're young. But at the end of the day, like, I don't think anyone's going to remember who won like English schools under 15s or that. So if you can just like find a love for the sport and then take it into your adult running, that's when you can kind of look at world class times. And I guess they're the good times. But even just getting out running when a lot of people that age are just playing Xbox and. Obviously, like we play our fair share of Xbox, but yeah, I mean, it's good to just.
Sub under 15s, like sub 2 sort of 15 to sub 2:15, sub 2:10. That's pretty solid. Like that gives you a lot to, you know, move forward on.
Yeah, it's good.
I swear. And like, would you say like 4:30 as well? Probably a 4:30, 1500.
What's the equivalent?
Yeah. But just enjoy it, mate. Just enjoy it.
Yeah, okay. I don't know for 5k. I don't really see not many people do them at that age. So
well, it's the old park run.
Yeah.
It's the park runs. But yeah, I would because well, under 15s don't even race 5k on the cross
from 5k or 17 something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just do cross country.
Yeah.
Yeah, cross country is good. Best way to develop as a junior.
Yeah. Someone's asked. They've just put three types of runners. I don't know. Is that a reference to something, Jen?
Not really that sure what that means, if I'm honest.
Okay.
You do.
I'm gonna go for three types of runners. Well, you got sprinters, middle distance, and long distance.
Okay. There you go. Good answer. So Aaron Scott Runs wants to know, would you rather have him as a boyfriend?
He asks me this like every week, so I think he'd really like me as his girlfriend. So I'm going to let Josh and him fight me out and just see who comes up on top, because I think that would be a good battle to watch.
Are they fighting in the gulag or in real life?
We could do both and then it'd be equal, because I reckon Aaron would win in real life, but Josh would probably win in the gulag.
Okay. What do you like most about yourself?
Well, that's hard.
I think what I like most about myself is I'm quite a driven person. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm quite hardworking, determined. And I think that helps when it comes to wanting to achieve the most I can in running. So I think I'd probably say that.
Decent. Do you have any race day rituals?
Do I have any race day rituals? Just to find the closest toilet to the start line. I think that was my free race ritual.
Toilet or bush, anything will do.
Either will do.
What's your favourite pre-race meal or snack?
If we're going for like the one I actually have every time rather than favourite, it's a bit weird. I have some rice cakes with peanut butter and honey on them, with some seeds on the top. But it seems to work for me. And I have that before sessions or any race.
I think that's it. You just got to find what works for you, really.
Exactly.
Good energy in that as well.
It sounds all right. I tried it.
It's good because you can travel anywhere with it as well, because you can get little sachets of peanut butter and honey and rice cakes.
So yeah, they might take them off you in the airport though, eh, Jen?
They might, you know. I've never had that happen to me yet, so.
we got a good one here. So do you think the stereotypical ideal runner's body has ever affected your self-esteem? And if so, how do you think the media could combat this for future runners?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Yeah. Don't have to answer that.
Oh, another topic.
I think as a junior, it probably affected me a lot more.
Mm.
Because you kind of look up to people who inspire you and you see what they do and you're like, wow, I want to try and achieve that. I need to look like this. But I think one thing that I think Shalane Flanagan wrote about once on Instagram was like, yes, I may look like this now, but when I was your age, I didn't look like this. This is what I looked like. I kind of developed as I got older and I got stronger, and you know, your body changes as you mature. And I think that's like a really important point to take forward, because it's easy, like we were saying earlier, it's easy to see what's put on social media, but you don't see everything else that kind of goes on behind the scenes as well. And I think as I've got older, I've realized that actually there is not an ideal body type for running. Everyone is different and you've got to find what's your body type and what works for you, where you stay healthy and injury free firstly, because if you're constantly breaking down, you're never going to achieve what you want, because you're never going to get the training in. And then some, like for a female, where you are having a period, because that is a sign of being healthy, where you have a good relationship with food and you know you enjoy things that aren't considered healthy, but you know in moderation everything is actually okay. And I think, yeah, where you are performing at your best as well. And if you can kind of combine all those factors together, that's your ideal body shape. and it shouldn't be dictated to you through the media or through social media or through other people's kind of statements towards you what you should look like. If that is a good answer to the question.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good advice. And I think particularly like recently, I think it's come out a lot of stuff. And in both men and women in the sport as well. I think so. Yeah, really, really good answer.
I was just going to say, mate, I think the problem is with running is like, say in like football or team sports, you'll get different positions. People will be slightly different makeups. They'll be slightly different builds. But in running, it's like there in your face so much, like so often. Everyone who is elite is a kind of very similar build, you know. So I think there is that pressure. But I think you're bang on, Jenny. You've got to look after your health first. You know, if you're talking 1%, maybe you can be super strict with your diet but be safe. Yeah. But I think it's just health first, performance, you know, second.
100%. I always say to myself, when I'm 70, I still want to be able to walk and, you know, be healthy and be able to go for a jog if I want to. I don't want to ruin that now trying to run an extra second faster over 10,000 meters.
Yeah.
I always go, but I think Robbie Andrews said in one of his videos, he said, eat what makes me happy, because if I'm not happy, I can't run properly anyway. So
that is a great, great thing to say.
Yeah. If you could be any other runner, or you had to be any other runner, who would you be?
Ooh. So I'm a massive fan of the Ingebrigtsens.
Okay.
So I'd probably go for Jakob.
Nice.
And just, yeah, experience their lifestyle and their training and stuff, because it fascinates me.
Mm. What's your KD, someone's asked?
4.6.
Wow, that's better than Josh Lund's, I've heard.
I know. Yeah. I'm actually quite high up in the leaderboard. People just don't realise.
If you play on PC, it don't count, though. So.
Oh no, I play on Xbox. You know.
Yeah,
Xbox is probably
100%.
Okay. I think that's it for our Q&A. But that was good fun. I think we should do that a bit more, Matt.
Yeah, definitely. I was just gonna say that obviously we're talking about like athletes, sponsorship and stuff like that, Jenny. You've obviously got a YouTube channel, haven't you? And I was just thinking sort of why YouTube, and do you think this is like social media is, we've, you know, spoken about seeing stuff on social media, seeing athletes, you know, like only posting their best side. But do you think that is almost like what an athlete has to do now in order to keep sponsorship deals or just put themselves out there, like boost their profile in a way, because sponsors are starting to ask a bit more of athletes, aren't they?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think athletes almost want to use social media. I think a lot of athletes want to use social media as well as a way of, like, you know, showing people who follow them what they're doing and what they've got coming up and stuff like that. But I think social media as a whole is definitely something a lot of companies now use as a great way of advertising their products and their athletes, and I think it's only going to get bigger and more intense as we progress through the years. So I think kind of buying into it as an athlete is really important. And using it to your advantage as well is definitely something that will benefit you going forward. It does almost frustrate me that you see individuals who aren't necessarily elite athletes. Sponsorship deals with running companies because they've got followers.
Yeah. It's ambassadors, isn't it? I was about to say that. Like, obviously, companies are now, they're probably not sponsoring half as many athletes, or not giving like money to athletes, or not helping athletes out. They're putting their money elsewhere with ambassadors who have 200,000 followers on Insta. And I was just like, you know, do you see that? That's almost where athletes are going to have to start going. But it's just tricky, isn't it? Because do you think it it will detriment performance, like if it becomes your life to promote and do this.
Yeah, I think as well, like you, I don't know how much these ambassadors get paid, but they're what they're getting given could help five, you know, potential, you know, Olympians on their journey. And it's like, I think it's opportunities like that that are being missed because big brands are going for people with big followings right now, but not necessarily looking at like the future profile of an athlete who may go on to inspire a generation as it is. And I think that is a real shame, personally.
It is. At the same time, I don't blame the businesses because they need to put their money where it's going to earn their money. And quite a lot of athletes are pretty introverted, aren't they? You know, they're pretty quiet. They don't really like, you know, show much at all.
Yeah.
So it is a tricky one. What's your thoughts, Lam?
I was just going to say what you said, Matt. Like, I think to an extent, people have to accept that these companies are looking for a return. And it is a business at the end of the day. Like, they're not just putting money in to help people. And I think that's where funding from like governing bodies could probably be a lot better and things like that. But yeah, definitely I agree, because there's plenty of athletes out there who do share their training and are of a good level who you could look at.
This is it. You think about the old days, and they would give athletes all this gear and sponsor athletes because athletes were on TV and they were traveling the world and doing stuff. So, but this is like pre-internet, right? So that's how they were like making money. And now they can give any Tom, Dick and Harry all this gear and just tell, look, you promote like crazy and show your lifestyle and gain a following, you're worth just as much to us as an athlete. You know, so I do feel like athletes have to start doing a little bit more.
And it's almost an athlete could look at what those other people are doing and maybe kind of use that to help shape their own style on social media. I think it's really important to remember to be yourself as well, because there's no point in putting all this stuff out that's just a load of BS, because that's just not portraying your own personality. And I think it's important to stay true to yourself as well.
Yeah. I think like a good example would be probably someone like Nick Simmons. I've seen like a lot of stuff before on his YouTube where he talks about how, whilst obviously he was a fantastic athlete, multiple like world champs and Olympics. He's run 142, I think, in London 2012. And I think he always said as well, like he accepts that, yeah, he got sponsorship from running fast times, but at the same time, he'd always do what he could to promote whatever brands he's sponsored by. And he did look at it as, so if he's going to like something with Run Gum, he'll still promote Nike at the time or Brooks when it was there as well, rather than just on race day putting on that kit and just expecting to get more and more sponsorship by just doing the bare minimum. He'd go above and beyond and look at other ways he could represent his brand, whether that's by publishing his training and including bits there about who he's sponsored by and just other things. And I think it is important for people to look at.
I think, yeah, it's all about how you market yourself, isn't it? And you are, at the end of the day, you are a commodity, and it's, you know, what people value you as to how well you're going to do, I think.
Yeah. So, Jen, why did you start your own YouTube then?
Well, so I'm doing a sports media course, sports broadcasting course, and my lead lecturer kind of suggested to me it would be a good idea to do something like that I could add to my very limited portfolio when I hand in my final project next year. So that was one of the reasons. And secondly, I kind of just thought it'd be a bit of a laugh, really, to kind of just document a bit of my life and have something to look back on in 10 years and cringe massively at. So I think those were kind of the main reasons. So, watch this space, because I'll try and make some more YouTube videos soon.
Yeah, what's in the pipeline? You've got any big plans?
At the moment, I'm still kind of trying to think of some ideas. I'm trying to get Josh involved a little bit, because I feel like he'd make quite good content. But he doesn't seem to ever move away from his computer. So unless I do like a day in the life living as my boyfriend.
That's a
part of yeah, literally. Just move from the bed to the chair and then back again in the evening.
Lots of tea.
But yeah, we'll have to see. Once we're able to travel a bit more and stuff, I'll be able to like kind of show people what it's like being an athlete that kind of goes to different countries to race and what is involved in that and things. Because I think that'd be quite a cool thing to kind of show other people.
Yeah.
So one day when COVID isn't around.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Mate, should we talk about the trials a little bit?
Yeah, let's get down to it. The big news this week.
the weekly news section. Olympic marathon trials in Kew Gardens. End of March, 26th of March. Lum, you can probably talk about this a fair bit because Lum's actually raced a 10K in Kew, didn't you, in September?
Yeah.
I've seen things on Twitter saying like, oh, you know, slow course, you know, stuff like that. Some people are saying like, oh, you know, you should be grateful there's a race and stuff like that. But it is a slow course, isn't it? Like the paths are narrow. The paths are like quite narrow paths, like two people, three people max. And there's a heck of a lot of turns. Didn't the guy say eight turns every 5K or 6K? That's like 60 odd turns, and they're sharp as well, right, Lum?
Yeah, I found the 10K course very, very tight. From what I remember running around it, I can't see how they'll change too much. There is one long path that goes down the middle. If you could do like a big rectangle or square around rows like that, I think it would be all right. But it really depends how they map out the course. I think one positive I'd look at is when we spoke to Josh Griffiths, obviously, I think a couple weeks ago about the potential of the trials. And I think it's really positive to see a kind of a marathon trials, because I think in itself that is a really exciting thing and it's something I'd love to see in future carrying on. But I think this year particularly that there's not been opportunities for people to run fast times really outside of that kind of London marathon that you paced at, Jen. I think it's quite harsh on a lot of athletes who are kind of there or thereabouts who that trials race could be shot at top three and the qualifying time. Whereas I think with the state of the course, obviously we'll have to see when it comes out officially, the likelihood of fast times might be quite slim.
I totally agree, man. I also think, they've almost been almost a little bit biased and probably a little bit lazy towards London as well, like having it down in London. Like there must have been other venues that they could have considered, which maybe you didn't have to lap as much or you know, didn't have as many turns. And surely there's places, you know, near enough just as flat as well. But yeah, so it'll be exciting to see it happen. Jenny, you won't be doing it, will you?
I'm not planning on running the marathon, but I have volunteered myself to pace it.
Is that what? There's pacemakers.
It's going to be pacemakers.
Okay.
They want me to do it. Yeah. I'll be there for half the race.
Go on.
With regards to that, they want to make it fast, but I think, like you guys said, it's the course that's going to prevent that from happening by the sounds of it. The fact that they were able to cut out 40 odd turns or whatever from the course doesn't suggest it's going to be fast. I think...
I know, I didn't realise they were doing pacemakers, to be fair. I thought it was just going to be a trials race, like a true run race, which I think could have been really cool. But yeah, fair enough. If they got pacemakers, it might be reasonably quick then.
So I'm not sure how it's going to pan out. I think, like you said, athletes who are like on the cusp of running the standards might not be in the best position to do it there, and they might miss out, and that would be really kind of upsetting. but then hopefully they can come to some sort of course arrangement where that doesn't happen. It's really hard to know, really. I'm not sure what I think of it, and I haven't seen enough detail.
I think there's a lot of reasons why.
The putting on a trials race is great, and I hope that's something they can continue in the years to come, like they do in America. I think that would be a really cool thing to have, like a special trials race for the Olympics every 4 years, somewhere in the UK. But I think maybe their choice of course could be somewhere else. I don't understand why they can't do it around St. James's Park like they did for London Marathon.
I was about to say that. I guess just like closing roads is hassle for them, and maybe this whole bubble thing that they might need to do, or limiting fans. I don't know, but yeah I would have thought closing, because I swear that place is only open for taxis anyway, right?
Yeah, it's not like a major road through London, is it? I mean, it's not going to cause massive queues of congestion everywhere else. And it's
might be cost related, because obviously London Marathon have huge budget. I'm not sure who's actually funding the trials.
Well, they've incorporated it into that race weekend, haven't they? And another thing I think is quite important to point out is they put the race on a Friday.
Mm.
A lot of people who are going to want to do that race are going to be in full-time employment. So it's going to require them
to take
holiday leave to even do the race. And I think that's a factor that has kind of been kind of pushed to the side, but still is kind of really valid in kind of, you know, the majority of both fields are going to be made up of people who are working full-time and have had to take unpaid leave to actually do the race.
Mm. And that as well is who gets invited, because it's not they set a clear criteria. But there's no selection criteria.
Yeah, I've seen comments on Twitter of like it's if you've run, you know, under 2:19 if you're a man or whatever to get in, but then there's a drop down if people kind of decide they don't want to do it, and then they're taking into account like their half marathon time as well. So it'll be interesting, to see how they actually, you know, get 30 people and how they kind of divvy it up and if it's done fairly or not as well.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, time will tell.
See what happens. We'll have to wait and see the course, because I think it will be better than the 10K I did, I'd imagine, because I think with the 10K I did, because it was so many people in it, they couldn't do any laps, so they had to make it kind of squiggle around a bit to make it one big lap. So hopefully they can sort out a single lap that isn't including lots of sharp turns, and the paths are a bit wider, they stick to the wide paths. But like you say,
you would be biased and say it's a slow course though, mate, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I was in super shoes though, so it balances out.
Yeah, you know.
Cheater shoes, mate. Cheater shoes. Mate, what are we saying? We've covered a lot.
Yeah, I think that wraps us up. Jenny, where can people find you if they want to give you a follow on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter?
Right. So if you want to follow me, I'd like you to like and subscribe my YouTube videos. So just search Jenny and my profile will come up there. Instagram, we're at Jenny Nesbitt 1. Twitter, Jenny Nesbitt. And I think if anyone uses Facebook, so any mums out there, Jenny Nesbitt on there as well.
Jenny Nesbitt, guys.
Yeah. If you didn't know, Jenny Nesbitt.
Right. Famous. Thank you very much, Jen. Really appreciate you coming on, and I really enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed it.
Good. Cheers, Jen.
Bye.